As we mentioned before, ego defenses are universal strategies used when there is an internal conflict or when faced with discordant external circumstances. Today, we will discuss the strategies of suppression, repression, and reaction formation, and what they signify about us. Previously, we defined suppression as the way of dealing with emotional conflicts or internal or external stressors by voluntarily avoiding thinking about disturbing problems, wishes, feelings, or experiences temporarily. That is, not dwelling on tangential problems in order to deal with one pressing problem. It is a postponing rather than procrastinating because the material can be retrieved later since it was not forgotten. Distressing feelings are acknowledged, but dealing with them is postponed until the subject feels more comfortable or the timing is more appropriate. In that way, neurotic anxiety is minimized since the material is not repressed, although anticipatory anxiety may still be present until the stressor is dealt with. In summary, suppression is basically excluding from the consciousness, albeit temporarily, troublesome thoughts, feelings, emotions, etc., until a later time. Although this sounds quite reasonable on the surface, I would submit that I find it disturbing. It seems to be just a palatable way of being in denial, rationalizing, temporarily deceitful, and even passive-aggressive, thereby surreptitiously engaging in one or more of the ego defenses that is considered quote-unquote immature. Realistically, what is the motivation to go back at a convenient time to take a second look at some disturbing mental state? When will the time ever be right to rehash something that we find troublesome, unless you are on a path of self-honesty and self-development? Even then, it is difficult because by then you have devised some other self-exculpatory justification. In the interim, that is, between when the troublesome situation arose and revisiting it, that is, the time when the troublesome event is suppressed, what is the mental state? Is it one of disregard, fantasy, or practicing image distortion of self or others? What happens during this interim period is important, I believe, because you're supposed to be continuing with more pressing matters. At least, that's what the justification for proposing suppression as a viable, mature ego defense strategy says. Would you be bringing your best self, your authentic self, to that interim endeavor while being distressed? I highly doubt it. Pretending is stressful, regardless of the justification, and suppression is a pretense. But a more dangerous one, I believe, because it is a conscious decision with a built-in delay. It is avoidance of your internal workings and the situation in which you find yourself. I personally prefer an outburst, a truthful expression of distress, rather than anything disingenuous, anything dishonest. An honest acknowledgement and assessment of the situation at hand. Be it anger, surprise, love, joy, sadness, fear, or any of their corollaries like shame, adoration, depression, panic, embarrassment, or some other troublesome mental state that bedevil us sometimes. At least we will know where we stand and can either choose to face it or turn tail and run. How do you see it? Despite it being easier and more common to continue stifling and smothering or concealing the feelings and thoughts that disturb our mental environment, isn't it healthier to get it out and let them go? I am sure you have and are aware of the ramifications of suppressing things. It will come out eventually. In what way is the question? To me, suppression is like clutter, constipation. It is uncomfortable and dangerous. It is like continuously stuffing random things into a bag and hoping it does not burst. Then, if it threatens to burst, slapping tape over the fragile parts that arise. It is like filling up your inbox with all the things that are too distressing or inconvenient to address presently, leaving them for a more convenient time. After all, you do intend to organize it when the time is right, correct? When exactly? Usually when things are about to explode? When you realize that you desperately need the keystone buried in the rubble? Can you function effectively with a cluttered mind? I cannot. Despite our best efforts, suppressed feelings affect the conduct of our life because it is not a truthful way of walking. It leads to guilt, shame, and disappointment. Not at all powerful. Let us consider a few defense mechanisms in the level higher than those that are considered immature, but lower than those considered mature. They are the neurotic or obsessional mechanisms. Will one of these be more effective than suppression? You decide. Neurotic mechanisms include intellectualization, undoing, repression, dissociation, reaction formation, displacement, and isolation of affect. This time, we will discuss repression and reaction formation as they most coincide with suppression per their definitions. In the practice of repression, the individual deals with emotional conflicts or stresses by being unable to remember or be cognitively aware of disturbing wishes, feelings, thoughts, or experiences. Repression is a defense that protects the subject from being aware of what he is experiencing or has experienced in the past. The subject may experience a particular affect, impulse, or desire, but the actual awareness of what it is that the idea is associated with remains out of awareness. While the emotional elements are clearly present and experienced, the cognitive elements remain outside the consciousness. In the practice of reaction formation, the individual deals with emotional conflicts or stresses by substituting behavior, thoughts, or feelings that are diametrically opposed to his or her unacceptable thoughts or feelings. In reaction formation, an original impulse, affect, is deemed unacceptable by the subject and an unconscious substitution is made. Feelings, impulses, and behaviors of opposite emotional tone are substituted for the original distressing ones. The observer does not see the alteration per se, but only the end product. By supplanting the original unacceptable feelings by its opposites, the subject avoids feelings of guilt. In addition, the substitution may gratify a wish to feel morally superior. Reaction formation is reasonably inferred when a subject reacts to an event with an emotion opposite in tone to the usual feelings evolved in most people. Would it be better to engage in one or more of these neurotic defenses or even one of the immature defenses instead of suppression? There are elements of both repression and reaction formation in suppression, but they too are in opposition to reality and therefore dishonest. I would argue that every impulse should be attended to or given voice or expression or reacted to, bar none. However, with honesty and forthrightness. That is to say, with restraint. I would like to present the concept of restraint as a more honest alternative to suppression, repression, or even reaction formation. Restraint in all manner of expression and conduct. Restraint as a means of utilizing your mental faculties for self-preservation and self-development and to live and prosper at the expense of others, as quoted initially. Sounds terrible? Hear me out. Firstly, we are all aware and can agree about what self-preservation and self-development are. Secondly, however, consider this. What does it mean to live at the expense of others? Well, it means to live in a way that might cause harm or disadvantage to another. Can you truly live alone, be an island unto oneself? even the Hermidius hermit lives at the expense of others. Consider the axe that he will use to cut down the tree to build a shelter or warm himself, or the receptacle in which he gathers water, or even the heat he uses to warm himself. Or, bearing those externalities, how about him even being alive? Isn't that at the expense of his mother, for a start? He did not create anything he has or uses. Someone before him did. Someone who could have been harmed in the process did. So, he essentially is living at the expense of another. Thirdly, seldom, very rarely, I would even argue never, does any situation require violence, meaning murderous, just earth-scorching response, and therefore restraint is possible. Why? You can usually see it coming. You can anticipate impending badness. That is, if you are being attentive, aware, and present to what you are engaging in. Secondly, you know yourself, you know your strengths and your weaknesses, and what you are able and willing to tolerate in a given circumstance. In addition, you are actively aware of your right and ability to choose your response to any situation and decide whether to entertain it at all. The concept of practicing restraint for our own purposes reminds me of a quote from that old book, Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen, where Mary told Elizabeth, quote, "I admire the activity of your benevolence, but every impulse or feeling should be guided by reason, and exertion should always be in proportion to what is required," end quote. It also reminds me that everything, in every situation that I find myself, therein lies an opportunity for growth, for self-development, and subsequently self-preservation in the most ecstatic way possible. Practicing restraint also brings to mind another quote by Machiavelli. He states, "Men are driven by two principal impulses, either by love or by fear." So considering that for a moment, in the setting of a troublesome emotion or thought, what primitive instinct is being threatened that compels the impulse to suppress or repress or engage in any of the ego defense strategies? Would it be more constructive to examine yourself to see what impulse is in the driver's seat when faced with any of the troublesome emotions or thoughts? Let us consider jealousy from the perspectives of both Machiavellian impulses as well as from the perspective of living and prospering at the expense of others. Jealousy and envy, there's a lot of that going on these days. I consider envy and jealousy just one of the more insipid emotions. How do you square hating someone or something for what he has or is while secretly wishing it were yours? Were you to acquire that thing, would you then turn around and hate yourself? Envy and jealousy are secondary and tertiary emotions of anger. Specifically, anger turned inwards. Self-judgmental, scornful, frustrated, irritated, resentful, disgusted, but all with oneself. By the way, all those adjectives are iterations of anger also. You see yourself as lacking, inadequate, but rather than rectify that, you lash out with anger in some form. Anger is a gift, however, I believe, an opportunity for self-reflection and a means of being objectively honest with oneself and your circumstances. Anger has the power to improve all aspects of life. It allows you to set boundaries and gain respect. Yes, respect based on fear, but respect nonetheless. It allows you to figure out and articulate your convictions. It allows you to gain self-awareness and self-esteem from a solid foundation, honesty. Only when it is repressed or suppressed does it become ugly. when it is repressed, even temporarily, it explodes in insidious ways, if not explosively. When suppressed, it turns inwards because it inflicts dissonance. And because it has to go somewhere, it attacks the bearer of that anger, you. And that we do not like. So, as we consider jealousy from the perspective of both Machiavellian impulses, love and fear, as well as from the perspective of living and prospering at the expense of others, jealousy and envy, that is anger, are destructive and antithetical, that is incompatible to the perspectives of love, fear, and living prosperously. From the perspective of love, self-love will dictate utilizing the immature strategies for self-preservation's sake. Fear, its corollary, will dictate the same gamut of responses as love, because, after all, isn't the desire to capture and keep love driven by the underlying fear of losing it? From the perspective of living and prospering at the expense of others, isn't that also driven by fear and therefore love? Love for oneself, so self-preservation. Isn't it driven by a desire not to expend your own resources needlessly? By living effortlessly? I believe so. While we are at it, let us consider another problematic emotion that is emphatically suppressed, that is shame. Shame is one of those emotions that readily devolve into anger. Whether you call it regret, remorse, or guilt, they are corollaries of shame. A deep, abiding sadness that gives rise to despair. And when the instinct for self-preservation kicks in, it turns to anger. Shame can be looked at as a consequence of guilt and doing wrong, going against your moral compass. It, like anger, is also instructive in that it forces you to act with integrity. Dig deep and analyze what is actually the bother. It is seldom a superficial thing that causes shame. It forces you to right your wrongs, make amends, and do better next time. It allows you to regain your self-respect. Without shame, you're not able to be compassionate or empathetic, a necessity for acting from a place of integrity and honesty towards oneself or others. Shame, or the realization of possible inappropriateness, allows you to self-correct, seek help and support, to live purposefully and ecstatically. Shame, like suppression and repression, is an excuse to continue practicing deceit. So, stepping back from it all, doesn't restraint demand your strategic engagement and astute deployment of your resources, the employment of your tact, self-awareness, and honesty as you deal with stressors, internal and external? Doesn't restraint propel you towards self-awareness as you pursue your ultimate aspirational goals? That of self-preservation, which is conscious and instinctual activity that revolves around protecting, nourishing, and biological propagation of yourself. Self-development, being a better version of your unique self and discovering your innate divinity by looking to context and adjusting rather than adhering to rules. The eviction of fear, the maintenance of love, and living and prospering at the expense of others. This is mutually beneficial activity that engages the exploits of everyone. So, in conclusion, I believe that because words have meaning and the characterization of the things that words represent, the ideas and the concept that words are tethered to are important. Those word concept, name and practice are indelibly imprinted on your psyche. Therefore, substituting the word and practice of restraint, that is, an unemotional, dispassionate, reasoned response for suppression, is crucial to the tenets of living honestly. Therefore, substituting the word and practice of restraint for suppression is crucial to the tenets of living honestly. Restraint meaning an unemotional, dispassionate, reasoned response to circumstances. Restraint is a response, not a reaction. It is a process that forces deliberation from which thoughtful actions flow. With practice, it becomes a reflex and does not add stress to the already taxed mental environment. It is a strategy that will facilitate self-awareness and garner respect from both internally and externally. Look around and notice and assess the folks around you who practice restraint. I bet you unwittingly admire them. One way in which I police myself and practice what I preach is to think, what if everything, what I am thinking or doing, is on the front page of the newspaper or these days become an internet meme? Would I be proud? Some version of this idea was attributed to businessman Warren Buffett. I don't believe it's a high bar, but it forces you to employ restraint in all aspects of your life. I will leave you with another quote, this time from Moonchild, a novel by the enigmatic Aleister Crowley. It is quite a tale about magic and war. He states, "It is a terrible error to let any natural impulse, physical or mental, stagnate. Crush it out, if you will, and be done with it, or fulfill it, and get it out of the system. But do not allow it to remain there and putrefy." The suppression of the normal sex instinct, for example, is responsible for 1,000 ills. In Puritan cultures, one inevitably find a morbid preoccupation with sex, coupled with every form of perversion and degeneracy. Aleister Crowley, 1917. Do a little thought experiment and replace the word sex in that quote with the words greed, anger, or fear. Unfortunately, the quote still retains its meaning. I think I will end it here today. Next time, we will discuss another of the mature defense mechanisms, as well as some other neurotic defense strategies. As I go along, I will post the list of defense strategies for you to print if you like, so that you have something tangible to read as you explore these concepts further. Let me know what thoughts and questions you have. Thank you very much for your attention and your support and your appreciation. Share the show. Subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Meanwhile, take care and care enough to act with virtue. Dream despite your deepest fears. Live honestly with dignity and grace. And above all, love without expecting reciprocation as you continue your inner odyssey.